This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, July 9th, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Karnatz. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business and Politics, has a one-on-one conversation with gubernatorial candidate Asa Hutchinson. Also, Walmart hosts its first open call for hundreds of U.S. suppliers.
Plus, Eureka Springs Hospital is one of the oldest hospitals in Arkansas. Now, some are looking at potential plans to build a brand new hospital on the outskirts of town. And we spend some time in a peach orchard in Clarksville.
Those stories and more. But first, state officials are working to implement changes to health insurance for public school employees enacted in last week's special legislative session. Questions have been raised about the fate of the part-time workers who will be removed from the health plan. Bob Alexander, the director of the Employee Benefits Division, says the state is directing school districts to help those part-time employees find state and federally funded navigators. Yesterday, during a meeting of the Insurance and Commerce Committees in Little Rock, Alexander discussed the matter with State Representative John Burris.
They will merely direct the people to call one of the guides, and then the guide can work them through the private option or the other options within the exchange.
I think that previously would have been a good strategy, but for about 2 weeks now, most of those navigators and in-person assisters are no longer employed. It would be preferable if y'all could get the FPL and household size and such, just to let them know, you know, what they're eligible for and then maybe who they could go contact.
I wasn't aware that the guides were not currently in existence.
There were more than 500 in-person navigators in Arkansas until the beginning of this month. But an amendment by Representative Nate Bell last year banned most outreach efforts. Bell, an opponent of the private option, offered support for its appropriation the last fiscal session in exchange for limits to navigators and outreach.
The new director of the state's health insurance says legislators need to start looking forward to the possibility of major changes in how the marketplace functions. Director Cheryl Smith says beginning in 2017, states can apply for what she characterizes as a blanket waiver from the federal government that could dramatically alter how the state provides insurance. Smith says she expects flexibility since federal officials have so far accepted widely diverging approaches, such as Arkansas's privatized Medicaid expansion and Vermont's opposite movement toward a single-payer system.
The degree to which they let Vermont go in that direction, whatever you decide to do, whatever the particulars are that you decide to do, that should give you a good indication of how far they're willing to let states go in this kind of innovation. I would encourage you to think big on this. This is not a small thing.
Any waiver request would have to ensure the same amount of people would be insured under an alternative model as were covered through the ACA's federally subsidized plans. Smith says the state is making some of its first hires for the marketplace this week and launching a comment period next week.
A new analysis of Northwest Arkansas's economic health indicates growth in key economic sectors. The latest edition of the Compass Report, compiled by thecitywire.com, says Northwest Arkansas's economy in the first quarter of 2014 did slow down compared to the first quarter of 2013, but is outpacing the economic growth of other parts of the state. Both the non-farm employment and building permit numbers in Northwest Arkansas were up for the first 3 months of 2014 compared to the same time last year.
The city of Fort Smith next week will break ground for a new $1.7 million facility to help train firefighters and law enforcement officials. Fort Smith Fire Chief Mike Richards says the new four-story training facility will offer many training experiences.
You can use to simulate going up a high rise, setting the opposed lines higher than we would normally do, say, from the ground level. We can actually do rappelling. We can go in this building, we can set it up to do other types of rescue, say trench rescue, by setting up parts of the building to go down below it and practice that.
Chief Richards says previously firefighters either had to travel out of town to have similar training or practice on dilapidated buildings that were unreliable and dangerous to use.
Structurally, they were not sound. There was hazards in the buildings like asbestos and things like this. And we reached a point those buildings became so dangerous, you know, and so unhealthy that we quit using those. And So you're right. You know, if they're not structurally sound and we don't know what the integrity of the building is, it creates another danger for us.
The training structures will be paid for by money from Act 833 that provides state funds for fire departments and by a one-time use of capital funds from an existing sales tax approved by Fort Smith voters in March of 2012.
Although his final term as Arkansas governor is winding down, Governor Mike Beebe is maintaining a busy schedule. Prior to heading to Brinkley to view damage from recent flooding yesterday afternoon, the governor spent yesterday morning in Bentonville. Governor Beebe spoke to hundreds of suppliers at Walmart's Made in USA open call event. He said the manufacturing sector of this country has always been the backbone of what makes this country great. The governor acknowledged that there has been a decline in American manufacturing, but that is changing.
What Walmart has done and what is going on now in America shows, as that film indicates, that we're not dead when it comes to manufacturing. In fact, revitalization is occurring.
We'll have more on Walmart's open call event later on this edition of Ozarks.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals have the day off today before opening a four-game series in Springfield, Missouri tomorrow night. The Nats return to Springdale Sunday night for a four-game homestand against Tulsa. In all, the Naturals have 23 home games left in 2014.
There's a slight chance of showers in the listening area this evening, with overnight lows expected to be from 65 to 70. Tomorrow, Thursday, a 30% chance of rain with highs from the mid-80s to the lower 90s. Thursday evening, cloudy conditions with lows in the lower 70s.
This is Ozarks at Large. Roby Brock, with our content partner Talk Business and Politics, recently sat down with Arkansas's two gubernatorial candidates, Democrat Mike Ross and Republican Asa Hutchinson, in separate conversations. The interviews originally aired on KATV Channel 7 in the Central Arkansas market. Today, we'll hear from Republican Asa Hutchinson about his jobs plan for the state of Arkansas, including workforce education. As Roby Brock found out, there are some similarities and differences between the plans of the two candidates.
You got a 6-point, kind of 6 priorities in your jobs plan. I'll pull them up here, and we've consolidated a couple of them: tax competitiveness, workforce education, healthcare reform, regulatory reform, choice in education, and computer science. Let's begin first with tax competitiveness. You want to see some change to the tax cut rate or to the tax rates in Arkansas. Kind of walk me through the generally speaking what you want to do in terms of that.
It's not a complicated plan. We have to have a competitive tax rate in Arkansas. Our 7% rate does not compete with Texas, all of our surrounding states. Missouri just lowered their income tax rate. So we are an island of high tax rate in Arkansas for individuals. We've got to get that down to be competitive with our surrounding states. My plan is to lower it from 7% to 6%, starting with the middle income folks, which would be from $20,000 to $75,000 in round numbers. That's our middle income. You prioritize them, reduce it a full percentage point, and some of those are at the 6% level now in the lower bracket, and so that would go down to 5%. So a full percent reduction in rate, which is equivalent to a 15% reduction in your tax rate, and that's will help us to be competitive. It is a good start for a tax competitive plan for Arkansas. The whole objective is job creation and be able to compete with our surrounding states. That's a necessary first step that we have to take.
What went into the construction of that zone of income levels that you're talking about there, that 20,000 to 75,000 range there? Why not $1 more, $1? I mean, what, you're leaving some folks out, bottom line.
Well, yes, but who are the people that are hurting most? It's the middle income. That's the segment of our society that has struggled. They're having the burden of paying more taxes than their share versus those that are in other income categories, and they're the ones that need relief and are hurting working two and three jobs. We've created a lot of programs for those in the lower income category. It's the middle income that's hurting. You've got to focus tax relief, and whenever you're looking at a limited amount that you can afford, which is we've vested in $100 million of tax relief for the first year. That is a doable amount of money. It's a prudent approach. You focus it and prioritize it. That's the middle income.
Let's talk about workforce education. One of the things that you want to do is create some councils across the state. I believe 8 of them. My math may be wrong on that. But one of the things that you've said in your jobs plan, and I want to pull up a graphic on this, it's a Hutchinson administration will work to create a system that represents the various and diverse regions of the state. Talk to me about what's diverse about different regions of the state in terms of workforce education. How is workforce education different in MENA versus, say, Mountain Home?
Well, for example, Mountain Home, they have their economic development plan that includes tourism. Now, MENA also includes tourism, but Mountain Home has a real focus on that. They have a retirement community. They have manufacturing. And so their economic plan in that region will say these are the jobs that we want to prioritize for the next decade where we're going to try to recruit industry in, expand, and put our focus on. So obviously, if that's your economic plan, let's do our workforce education to train toward the jobs. That all makes sense to me. And so, obviously there's basic ones that you need. I mean, carpentry, welding, I mean, you need that in every environment. But the specialties of hospitality, the specialties in some manufacturing is unique to a particular region and what they want to prioritize. It could be in further processing of food in the agricultural community or labor for our farm operations. So our workforce education, our job skill training should be geared toward the economic plan and not separated from it.
Got to ask you about computer science. This is a big component of your jobs plan here. You want computer science taught in every high school. You want it to be available for credit. You say it's going to be good for jobs, good for entrepreneurship. What's the price tag on putting that in every school? You got to have teachers to do it. You got to have some degree of hardware and software there to do it too.
Well, the hardware and software is already being put into the schools, and so let's double utilize it. For the purpose of teaching computer science. The whole cost of it is less than $500,000 because it doesn't cost anything to change the law to give credit for computer science as a math or a science graduation credit. That costs no money at all, and that's the incentive to take the course. Secondly, you've got to retrain enough math or science teachers so that you could have one in every high school in Arkansas. We've looked at the training costs there. You could probably do it pro bono because there's so many groups that want to teach coding for computers in high schools to develop the curriculum, but the training cost, which we would probably cover, would be $500,000. So it's a very modest investment for an incredible return, and if we had only 5% of our graduates take computer science, because it's not mandated, you'd be creating 1,500 new computer science or programmers every year in Arkansas, which would change our economy.
Last question for you. Let's talk about regulatory reform. You say basically that state regulations on business should be designed to protect our environment, our citizens, and the safety of our workers. Too often they lack kind of common sense. Name me a regulation that you think needs to be eliminated, and tell me a good regulation, one that you think is on the books now that is a proper one to keep maintained.
Well, whenever you look at our regulatory environment, the big problem is that we're not processing our permits for air quality, for manufacturing facilities quick enough. In Louisiana, they process a application for a manufacturing facility for an air quality permit 3 months quicker than we do in Arkansas. Texas, they have it streamlined even more than that. And this is what industry wants you to be responsive to. They want to protect the environment. Let's just move it through very quickly.
Second, so it's not a particular, there's not a particular regulation on the books you want to see overturned. You're talking about the process of regulation.
The process of regulation, but at the same time, you also want to fight against some overreaching regulations from the federal level, and there's a state role to play. The president just rolled out the new EPA regulations, bypassed Congress on this. It's a war on carbon, a war on coal that would adversely impact Arkansas because we're more dependent on coal than some other states. And so I would gather our industry, but also our state regulators together and say they're inviting public comment. Let's express our opposition to it as to how it would hurt manufacturing in Arkansas, how it would hurt the consumers because utility rates would go up.
Just filing public comments that in opposition to that, is that going to stop the EPA from going forward with it? I mean, what else can you do?
Well, I would like to think the administration is very sincere about inviting public comments. Why do you have public comments? It's because you want to take those into consideration as to how you move forward. So, absolutely. Secondly, I think there is some question as to the legal authority for those regulations, and the state should consider challenging those regulations. So this is a different approach to a regulatory environment. The second thing I would do is put in a moratorium immediately as I become governor so that we would stop the new regulations coming into place without the cost-benefit analysis going into place. So those are a couple of very specific actions that would be in place. You ask me about something I like.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, we want to protect the Buffalo River. And it's obviously important that we do not allow these very large-scale hog operations in our state that would jeopardize our natural streams. And so we would tighten up that process. Obviously, it's a regulation that is important to protect our streams and our water quality that we value in this state. I grew up on the Spavinaw Creek. Drinking out of the stream, and I think we all enjoy that great quality of the state.
That was Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business and Politics, speaking with gubernatorial candidate Asa Hutchinson. Tomorrow, we'll hear from the Democratic candidate for governor, Mike Ross. Talk Business and Politics airs Sunday mornings at 9 on KATV Channel 7 in the Central Arkansas market. Support for Talk Business and Politics on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
Imagine there's a way to hack into your brain to rewire it, to make you smarter, even happier.
Altering cognitive abilities, altering personality is within our reach now.
It's like science fiction.
It's mapping an unexplored universe.
I'm Guy Raz. The hackers are coming for your brain, the climate, even the animal kingdom on the next TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Listen Sundays at noon to 91.3 FM.
Did you know that good weather can cause too many peaches to grow in an orchard?
A peach has been called an eternal optimist before because it'll always set more fruit than it's ever capable of bearing. In a heavy fruit set year, it can set so many that it'll actually break itself down. Therefore, in the spring, we have to come through and thin. Usually we've got a little thinning club and knock off. You know, you want a peach about every 6 inches because they will develop so close together that they'll never size. There's just too many of them. So this year we kind of had Mother Nature do that for us with the freeze. So actually didn't have to go through and do it. But, you know, every year you've got to take some time go through. That's just part of the bit. You know, a lot of people think that the work on peaches is picking them. Well, picking them is the best part because, you know, you can actually harvest and maybe eat a few here and there. It's those January and February days when you're pruning and then, the May days whenever you're thinning. That's where a lot of the work comes in.
In the second half hour of Ozarks, we pay a visit to Peach Pickin' Paradise in Clarksville. That story just ahead on Ozarks at Large.
In January of 2013, Walmart announced intentions to buy $50 billion in U.S. products in 10 years in an effort to grow U.S. manufacturing and encourage the creation of U.S. jobs. In an effort to honor this commitment, Walmart hosted its first ever Made in USA Open Call event in Bentonville yesterday. More than 500 suppliers from across the country participated in more than 800 meetings during the course of the day. The event began yesterday morning with guests listening to remarks from Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe, as well as Bill Simon, President and CEO of Walmart U.S.
For the first time in a generation or more, there's an opportunity for us to make products closer to the point of consumption. It is more efficient to do that, and it is more effective to do that, and that's really what this is about. We made a commitment to buy an additional $250 billion in U.S. manufactured products over the next 10 years, an additional $250 billion. We already buy about two-thirds of what we buy and sell in the is already made or assembled or grown here in the U.S. And it's not just a program. It can't work if it's just a program. It has to work because it will work because it is an economic reality. And we're seeing the numbers swing in that direction, and you'll hear a little bit more about that today. When we buy your products, we're helping the economy, we're helping our customer, we're creating jobs, we're building communities, and we're building and rebuilding our country.
According to Walmart's website, the company will meet its goal of investing in more U.S.-made products by increasing what the company already buys of U.S.-manufactured goods, sourcing new-to-Walmart-manufactured goods, and reshoring the manufacturing of goods Walmart currently buys. During yesterday's morning meeting, Michelle Gleckler, Executive Vice President of Consumables and U.S. Manufacturing, offered an example of how reshoring efforts have already proved beneficial.
The towels and some of the towels are up here displayed. We've seen when we reshored the towels, so they were made somewhere else. They're now made in Griffin, Georgia. We have better sales and we have lower inventory. That's a big benefit if you work for Duncan McNaughton. In addition, other things that we've seen, other benefits, savings. One of our suppliers we collaborated with, and we realized that about $7 million annually could be saved in freight if we assembled the goods closer to where we're selling them. And I'll go into a little more about the characteristics of what things make economic sense, but I want to talk to you about something else, and it's really important in today's retail environment, and that's speed. Sometimes customers just get onto something and they want what they want and they want it now. Let me tell you, if it's made here, you can get it faster. And that means we can delight more customers.
Throughout the course of the day, potential suppliers were able to participate in educational sessions that covered topics like labeling and packaging, financing, sustainability, and product compliance. Of course, the highlight for many suppliers was likely the chance to have a 30-minute meeting with merchants about their products. More than 175 buyers attended yesterday's open call event. In a conference call with reporters late yesterday afternoon, Michelle Gleckler said merchants listened to pitches from more than 500 suppliers, and about half of them were people who have never worked with Walmart. One of those suppliers was John Cundy, a Detroit, Michigan resident who creates a product called Trash Ease. He describes his product as a portable, reusable trash bag holder. The product is constructed from metal bent into a shape that will clip onto a counter or table and will hold a 13-gallon trash bag. Cundy said he came up with the idea for the product a few years ago.
3 years ago, I was at a track meet, and after the meet, the parents clean up the bleachers and the area around the track. And there was bottles and garbage all over the bleachers, and I'm thinking, kind of, how can I not do this again? So kind of with my job, I work at one of the big three in Detroit. I'm a sculptor. I make cars out of clay. We got our tools that we use in the job. I have a wire bending tool that I actually use to create the shape that we're using for the garbage, for the portable garbage can.
Cundy said he has the capability to manufacture 1 million products annually. 2 years ago, he said his company sold 5,000 units. Last year, that number increased to 20,000. And so far this year, he's sold 42,000 units. Yesterday, Walmart committed to purchasing 50,000 units, which Cundy said is more than double his largest order.
I got the biggest order of my life. It was an amazing moment. It was just, people, I'm sure, they saw me walk around about 2 feet off the ground for the last hour and a half. It's been actually just a spectacular day.
Michelle Gleckler, Executive Vice President of Consumables and U.S. Manufacturing, said another product that intrigued buyers was a taco plate. She said buyers committed to purchasing 1 million units of this product. Items that were presented to merchants throughout the day included toys, home goods, and paper products. Because meetings were still occurring during yesterday's phone conference, Gluckler didn't have a final count of how many suppliers were able to sell their products. She said it would take a few days to get official numbers. However, Gluckler did say that because these products are created in the U.S., some of them could hit the shelves within the next 2 months.
Basically, if the goods are finished right now, we could have them in the store for a feature probably in the next 60 days. It really depends on what the capacity of the supplier and the factory would be. But because they're made here, I would say you'll see many of these products in stores before the holiday season, which was really the goal of hosting this here in July.
Gluckler noted that Walmart.com buyers attended yesterday's event as well, so items they purchased could be ready in less time than the 60 days she cited for stores. To make sure items in stores are recognized as a product manufactured in the U.S., Gluckler said they are working with suppliers to include that information on their packaging. Online shoppers can find U.S.-made goods by visiting walmart.com/americanjobs. For more information on John Cundy's product, visit TrashEase, that's EASE.com. This is Ozarks at Large. It is Wednesday, July 9th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
And joining us now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We're going to pick up where we left off on Sunday.
Where did we leave off?
We were talking about the Rogers Historical Museum.
Yes.
And Up in the Air, an exhibit of ceramic balloons created by a balloonist.
We did.
So here's what's going on at some of the other museums. Today is the Shiloh Museum. Tomorrow we'll talk about the Fort Smith Museum of History.
Okay.
The Shiloh Museum has an exhibit on show that I've got to get over and spend some time with. It's called Healing Waters. Mm-hmm. And it looks at Eureka Springs, but also all of the other little towns that jumped on the Taking the Waters bandwagon. Electric Springs, Park Springs, Cherokee City and El Dorado, all in Benton County, Sulphur City in Washington County, Elixir Springs in Boone County, and St. Paul, which was a surprise to me, although I know my Madison County history well, and Aurora in Madison County. Huh. Everybody took the waters in the late 19th century. Everybody. And then in the 1910s, according to Marie DeMarucas, who's the curator of this exhibit, science kind of got in the way of that. The science of medicine got better, and reliance on natural cures faded by the end of World War I. The exhibit, however, will not fade. It will be around through December 13th at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale, and admission is free.
Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Pianist and composer Tara Kamonger's new album is called East of Melancholy, piano music from Russia to Iran. I'm Katie Henriksen, host of Up Note, Monday through Friday from 11 to noon on KUAF, as well as 6 p.m. weeknights on KUAF 2. Join me for music from the new album. That's a piece from Amanullah Hossein, excerpts from Mosaics. That's coming up Thursday on Of Note right here on KUAF.
Eureka Springs Hospital is one of the oldest hospitals in Arkansas, established in 1929 to serve the residents of rural Carroll County. But by the turn of the 21st century, the antiquated facility was struggling financially. It's since been turned around by a for-profit medical facilities management firm. That firm now seeks to build a brand new hospital on the outskirts of town. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, the local community will need to provide a large infusion of money to make it work.
Eureka Springs Hospital is located in the Uptown Historic District and sees as many as 10 acute care patients per day during the busy tourist season, especially. The licensed critical care facility is owned by the city and has long been operated by the Eureka Springs Hospital Commission. But to help build efficiencies, improve technologies, and resolve financial problems, the commission leased the hospital to two professional management firms. The first was Washington Regional Medical Center in Fayetteville. It abandoned that lease after a few years. That's when Allegiance Health Management stepped in 7 years ago, based in Shreveport, Louisiana. The for-profit corporation is committed to assisting rural communities keep medical infrastructure running in Texas, Oklahoma, North Carolina, Mississippi, Georgia, and Arkansas. Chris Barriola is CEO of Eureka Springs Hospital.
Critical access hospitals are not put into place to make money, but they're there to offer a service for the community, and that's basically what we're going to be doing, is just consistently trying to find out different ways we can serve the community.
And from the very beginning, Allegiance has committed to building a brand new hospital for Eureka to consolidate services and double capacity. And it's found a new location, a 120-acre parcel along Highway 62 West on the edge of town. Municipal water runs to this site, but no wastewater line. Barriola said that they looked at property in town, but under new federal rules, critical access hospitals must be at least 30 miles apart on flatland or 15 miles apart in mountainous terrain. Berryville, the next town over, built a hospital 2 decades ago. So the proposed western border site is just far enough away to maintain Eureka's critical care certification. The estimated cost for the new hospital? $15 to $25 million, Barriola says, which Allegiance will finance contingent on the city constructing sewer facilities.
What we were hoping to do is maybe if, you know, the local government could look at the community and see what we could do, what the community could do to help put the hospital there in place if there's for those lines.
But Eureka Springs Mayor Morse Pate says maybe it's time to downsize.
I think we could probably get by with a critical care clinic.
Mayor Morse Pate believes Eureka Springs' 2,000 residents, along with its 750,000 annual visitors, would be better served by a critical care facility that could triage then transfer patients to surrounding hospitals in Springfield, Missouri, Tulsa, and Fayetteville. More than 100 hospitals operate across the state, half have fewer than 100 beds. Half of those are designated by the federal government as critical access rural hospitals, including Eureka's. While a third of all Arkansas counties don't even have a hospital, Carroll County has 2. The second one in Berryville is operated by Mercy, a regional Catholic nonprofit medical system. And Washington Regional Medical Center operates a family clinic on the east side of Eureka. Mercy has just opened a brand new walk-in clinic in Uptown Eureka. Even with all those medical facilities, Eureka Springs Mayor Morse Pate says City Council appears to be interested in the new hospital concept.
The City Council allotted $5,000 for an engineering study of the sewer line from where it actually stops at Pivot Rock Road for an extension out to where the property that the proposed hospital is supposed to go on. In 2008, there was a study done. If it was $1.8 million in 2008, then you could probably look at 2.5 now or better.
Mayor Morse Pate, who's not running for re-election this fall, insists the city cannot shoulder any more infrastructure debt.
We're currently about almost $7 million in bond covenants now on existing water sewer issues.
Mayor Pate says if Allegiance wants to build the hospital, it ought to foot the sewer bill. Like when Walmart pitched building an Express Mart in town some years back, the retailer offered to pay for wastewater line installation. That project was ditched, though, due to public opposition. The public, however, has not had much to say about this venture yet. But Eureka Springs Hospital Commission is very interested. It has $1.7 million banked from lease payments and home health care revenue, but Chairman Michael Mary says, the Arkansas Attorney General says, that money can't be used for the new Allegiance Hospital project.
If the commission were to assist either the city or the Allegiance Health Group with that sewer system, it would essentially be giving Allegiance Healthcare a financial benefit. And the Attorney General's office again would step in and say, no, we can't do this.
Michael Mary says the commission, with support from Eureka Springs City Council, leased the hospital to Allegiance precisely because the for-profit medical facilities management firm was willing to invest in Eureka with clear incentive.
Just looking forward, I think the commission realizes that, well, first off, we're operating in a facility that is the oldest continually operated hospital in the state of Arkansas. The building itself, without a doubt, needs to be replaced. And the commission was essentially looking for an opportunity to step in and construct a new facility. Now, that left us with two opportunities. The commission could build one, or we could find a company that would willingly come in with the idea of keeping our licensure to themselves once the new facility was built, which was their initiative to step in and do the building, is they have a license that they're currently leasing, but if they build a new hospital, we'll give it to them.
For no cost. And Allegiance, which is in the business of making money, Michael O'Meary says, should be able to tackle the entire project. A call to Allegiance for comment was not returned, but if it refuses to cover the municipal wastewater line, what about just building on the current historic hospital site? Eureka Springs Hospital CEO Chris Barriola.
The current land and the current property it's on, there's just no space to develop a large hospital there.
For now, the iconic hospital operates in the black in summer, red in winter. So is financially stable. Plus, it's the largest employer in town. Three docs are on staff, and the 24/7 ER is often busy attending to accidents, illness, birth, and death. But if all else fails, there is one other option, says CEO Chris Barriola.
We'll just keep the quality health care going in the current facility we have and band-aid it along. I mean, the facility is definitely a safe facility. I mean, we have no infections, no acquired infections. We meet all the core measures that the state and the government applies to us each year. We pass the surveys that are given to us every year from the state and the government. So I mean, we're just going to keep it going. I mean, the hospital gives great health care, personal health care, and it has great staff. And we're trying to innovate it as much as possible. And the technology in the old building is very good, and it's top-notch and with the 21st century. So we could just look at ways to improve and constantly improve it and just keep it up to date and look at ways to grow it outside of the current campus.
Which is good news for Eureka, that even if plans to build a new hospital die, the old hospital will continue to revive. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Karnatz. The Fort Smith Public Library is holding a voter registration day today at all library locations. Stop by to register to vote or update your name and or address information. The library will help you take care of all of the details and will even mail in your application for you. Arkansas residents can register at the special voter registration day until 9 p.m. at the main library or until 6 p.m. at branch locations. You can also register to vote any day at any Fort Smith Public Library location. There is no charge for this service.
Rocking P Ranch and Crowder College Aggies will present Ranch Rodeo this evening in the Rough Rider Arena, which is located at 608 Field Avenue in Neosho, Missouri. There will be five events featured, including sorting, mugging, pasture team roping, branding, and trailer loading. Contestants will be from the four-state area. If you'd like more information about entering as a contestant, contact Rocking P Ranch at 417-652-3297. The Crowder College Aggies will be serving a pulled pork dinner, which includes slaw, baked beans, and a drink for $5, along with a fully stocked concession stand. Dinner will be ready at about 5:30. Gate admission is $5 per person and free for those 12 and younger. Family discounts are available for those with five or more paying attendees. Family admission is $20. For more information, call Karen at 417-455-5720.
The Washington County Historical Society's 43rd Annual Ice Cream Social is scheduled for August 16th from 3 p.m. until 6 p.m. at the Headquarters House, located at 118 East Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Enjoy ice cream, homemade cakes and cookies, live music, folks dressed in period dress, and the opportunity to dress up yourself. Tickets will be available at the event.
You can meet internationally recognized artist Jeff Koons, whose stainless steel sculpture, Hanging Heart, is on view in the Crystal Bridges Restaurant 11. The event is Friday evening at 7. Koons' ironically monumental reimaginings of everyday subjects such as inflatable toys and his appropriations of commercial imagery have been exhibited worldwide. A book signing by the artist will follow the lecture. Admission is $15 for the public and $12 for members. You can register at crystalbridges.org or by calling guest services at 479-657-2335.
Season 14 of American Idol will be bringing auditions close to the listening area via its bus tour. The popular reality singing competition will hold open call auditions at Branson Landing Saturday, July 19th. Auditions begin at 9 a.m. You must bring two forms of ID to show proof of your age and a photograph. Everyone participating in the Idol bus auditions must also bring a completed personal release. Those under the age of 18 and attending with a guardian other than your parent, a completed and notarized guardian and medical authorization for minors is required. AmericanIdol.com for more information. Organizers of the Johnson County Peach Festival say the event is the longest running festival in the state. The first festival was held in Ludwig in 1938. Every year since, including this year's edition at the end of the month, has been held in Clarksville. As Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums learned earlier this week, the peaches are cooperating this year, and some have already ripened.
The commercial peach industry took root in Arkansas in the late 19th century, according to the Encyclopedia of Arkansas. By 1901, Johnson County orchards were sending as many as 10 boxcars of peaches to customers annually. While Johnson wasn't the only county with orchards, many people in the state still think of the western Arkansas county as the center of the fruit's existence in Arkansas.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Steve Morgan is the fourth generation of his family to live on a tract of land about 60 miles east of Fort Smith and about 100 miles south of Fayetteville. A receipt Steve's family discovered in a family Bible indicates the first fruit trees were shipped to the land in the 1890s, but commercial peaches weren't grown until the 1920s. For decades, the orchards were part of a booming industry in Johnson County.
The county was all peaches, and there were thousands of acres of peaches in our county. Now it's hundreds. It's much slower, much smaller than it once was as far as the production. But we still feel like we have the right soil, the right air to make a unique taste, very good tasting fruit.
Steve and his family run the orchard called Peach Pickin' Paradise, and that's pretty much what it is. While his ancestors grew and shipped to markets as far away as Chicago, Peach Pickin' Paradise lets the fruit stay on the tree longer, and 6 days a week during the peach season, customers come to the orchard to pick their own.
Be 225.
On Monday, customers were bringing peaches up from the orchard to the stand for themselves and for others.
Yeah, 2-3 weeks.
We relatives in Kansas City life.
Okay.
Thank you.
That'd be a good time. Thank you.
Steve Morgan says visitors come from all over the state, from Texas, from Nebraska, and elsewhere, to take advantage of the peach season. Customers can pick their own or, for a bit more money, just pull up and buy a bushel of peaches taken off the trees that morning by Steve and his family. He says picking the fruit yourself is easy. No ladders, no obstacles.
If you grew up in a peach orchard or if you grew up working as a picker, then you really have an aversion to it. You know, there are people that drive up and say, no, I'm never going back out there. But if you can ever get them out to the orchard for 15 minutes of picking, they love it. You know, they say, okay, yeah, I can do that. You know, you find that juicy ripe peach that's just perfect. We encourage a little sampling while you're out there.
Give it a try there.
Sampling is exactly what Mark Morgan was doing in the orchard on Monday. Steve's son, he's the fifth generation to call this land home. He returned to Clarksville after earning his bachelor's and master's degrees at the University of Arkansas.
You know, if we get somebody that wants some ship somewhere, we're not equipped for that. You know, we're equipped for them getting the sugar on the tree, harvesting that day, used as quick as possible.
When he's not slicing off a ripe peach for a visitor, he's often inspecting the trees. The paths between the rows are wide enough for a customer's car or for Mark's four-wheeler. Mark says something people may not know about peach trees is that when the weather cooperates, there can be too many peaches.
A peach has been called an eternal optimist before because it'll always set more fruit than it's ever capable of bearing. In a heavy fruit set year, it can set so many that it'll actually break itself down. Therefore, in the spring, we have to come through and thin. Usually we've got a little thinning club and knock off. You know, you want a peach about every 6 inches because they will develop so close together that they'll never size. There's just too many of them. So this year, we kind of had Mother Nature do that for us with the freeze. So actually didn't have to go through and do it. But, you know, every year you've got to take some time go through. That's just part of the bit. You know, a lot of people think that the work on peaches is picking them. Well, picking them's the best part because, you know, you can actually harvest and maybe eat a few here and there. It's those January and February days when you're pruning, and then the May days whenever you're thinning. That's where a lot of the work comes in. It's to maintain that tree, maintain that canopy.
That April 15th freeze Mark mentioned, the temperature fell to 28 or 29 degrees in the orchard, thinned this summer's crop and wiped out certain varieties altogether that would be expected to be ready later in the season. Peach growers like Steve and Mark Morgan will tell you that's part of the environmental gamble of owning an orchard in Arkansas. The good news is that this year's freeze did not hurt the first crop, Red Havens. The first Red Havens were picked Saturday, and people have been stopping by since. Steve Morgan says the Red Havens are here now, but gone soon.
In our orchard, we've got about 20 different varieties. A variety will last 10 days to 2 weeks, and so we try to overlap those with other varieties. Here we have Bel Air, Topaz. We go on down to Loring and Bisco, ending our year with Crest Haven, Jefferson. Others fill in the middle. Those are all yellow freestones. We also have some white peaches. And so they start with our white nectar. We have some White County and White Diamond. White County and White Diamonds were both developed by the University of Arkansas here at the Fruit Substation in Clarksville. And they're a low acid white peach. So they're a little bit newer variety. We have some, we also have some yellow clings that are, that we use for canning. The cling is actually the best canning peach. Even though it's a little more work because you have to cut it off that seed. But for the professional home canner, the cling is, there's no substitute for it.
The types of peaches follow a somewhat predictable order. Red Havens are generally first, but just when the season begins is dependent on Mother Nature. Steve says the heat and sun produce the sugar inside the fruit. Even experienced farmers could be surprised by an advance or delayed harvest. But there is one thing experienced farmers are very good at, deciding when a peach is ready to be eaten.
Smell is a really good way of telling. After you pick a few peaches, you can really tell. I never encourage anyone to mash or press on a peach because then you've left a bruise on it. You're committed.
Mm-hmm. You're in.
You're in. Yeah. You've already bruised it. Okay, so the best way is just, you can actually, without pressing, when you pick, you can actually feel the ripeness of the fruit in your hand.
The Morgans will also tell you when you take your peaches home if they need to be eaten as soon as possible or if you have a few days. Steve uses a basket of freshly picked Red Havens as an example of how to visually inspect a peach to see if it's at its majestic peak.
Within the color, there are background colors. So if you have a fruit, let me go over here. And the primary color of this is red, but the undertone is yellow. So you really want to, if you really want to ripen, you're looking for a deep yellow. Just forget about the red.
Okay.
Look for a deeper yellow. When you look at the stem, a little green tint on this one. This one's going to be firm. Okay. It's got just a little green tint. A day, maybe 2 days with that one, and it will be it'll be ready to roll. This one is a little bit riper. You can see that yellow undertone is much more pronounced.
But to distill all of this down, when is the best time to eat a peach?
Right off the tree, underneath the tree, in the orchard.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's as good as it's going to get, right?
As good as it's going to get. That's it. That's it. Yeah. I had the privilege of doing that throughout the summer, and that's the best place and the best way.
Peach Pickin' Paradise is open Monday through Saturday, 7:30 to 5:30 during the season, as long as there is fruit. You can call their number, 754-2006, to get an update on condition and amounts of available peaches. If you call during their business hours, you just might get John Frost to tell you exactly what you want to know.
Peach Pickin' Paradise. Yes, sir, we opened on the Red Havens on Saturday. They're in a good stage right now.
If you do go, take cash or a check. There's no electricity at the stand to run your credit or debit card. You can find more by going to the Peach Pickin' Paradise Facebook page. And the Johnson County Peach Festival this year is Friday, July 25th through Sunday the 27th in Clarksville, and will include crafts, live music, a peach cobbler bake-off, a horseshoes tournament, a peach pie eating contest, a softball tournament, a parade, a talent show, a peach spitting contest, and a peach eating contest. You can learn more about the festival at the Johnson County Peach Festival Facebook page. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Robin Young. The web has changed the notion of trust. We'll look at the sites and services changing how we view strangers.
Dog vacay, where instead of leaving your dog at a kennel, you actually leave it at somebody's house. There's something called Feastly, in which chefs open up their homes. There are sites like Relay Rides, in which you can rent somebody's car. They'll hand you their keys and off you go.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now, coming up next here on KUAF.
Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Clarksville.
Clarksville. Peaches.
Peaches, yes. Yeah. They were great. It sounded like Kyle had a fun time, so I'll have to go down there sometime and pick some peaches.
For sure.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Christina will be back along with her co-host, Kyle Kellums. And remember, you can catch up on episodes of Ozarks at Large at our website,
ozarksatlarge.com.
You can also find our podcast at your app store. Mm-hmm. We're going to end today's edition of Ozarks with a song called Carolina Diamonds by Red Leg Husky. The band will be performing tomorrow night at Smoke and Barrel in Fayetteville, and you can find out more at redleghusky.com. Thanks again for listening, and have a fantastic Wednesday.
Met my sister in a summer shade, lonesome ballads flowing through her veins, was on a mind she ain't afraid to say, but her touch is tender and her love is bright. I found my brother and the songs we play always got a rhythm pounding through his veins. He looks out for me even when I push him away. I sang along until our voices fade. Reach the end of April rains, midnight moonshine, lightning to our veins. Almost gave up hope, but it was worth the wait for Carolina diamonds and a